This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a three-time champion, check out my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danny Meringue.
Dusty Bun.
Dusty Hera.
I've been really busy. I'm trying to save the world from Russians and monsters.
This is Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and Portland's sports leader.
Of course you have.
1080.
I want to hear it.
The Fan.
Hi, number three here on a Danny and Dusty a Tuesday afternoon. We're listening on 1080 AM, watching along on YouTube.com/1080AmTheFan or Twitch.tv/1080AmTheFan. We appreciate you. We love you. Thank you for hanging out with us on this wonderful, wonderful Tuesday. The Portland Trailblazers get another win, this time in the city of brotherly love, as the woeful 76ers get raffle stomped in the second half, scoring 41 total points in the second half as the Blazers score 35 in the third quarter alone. They add another injury.
Did you just say they got waffle stomped?
Raffle.
Oh.
RFL. Waffle stomp is probably good, too. You get a little waffle print. Throw them, going back to the old waffle print Nikes.
Yeah, those are different, what I'm thinking of. Yeah.
No, I know what you're going with. I'm trying to be nice. But
I'm confused.
Beyond that, the Portland Trailblazers is guaranteed a winning road trip on a seven-game trip. That is four wins on a seven-game trip. They are now 4-1 on this trip with Boston.
Oh, really?
And Oklahoma City remaining.
Okay. Okay.
Coming out of this game, Anthony Simons goes nuclear in the third quarter. It's nothing we haven't seen before. I've said it before, and I know I'll get tagged as the ant guy, ant propaganda guy. I don't care. There's maybe three guys in the entire NBA that when they get hot, shoot better than him. When he gets in a groove, it's disgusting. And it's the kind of thing that can swing a game on a nightly basis. And it's fun to watch. But we've seen that happen before.
Only three in the entire NBA?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Dame, Steph, and Clay. From three in particular?
Not Trey?
Huh?
Not Trey?
No. No. Oh. And the data backs it up. As far as guys who make five or more threes in a game. Did you know he passed CJ McCollum for most games of five or more made threes in Trailblazers history last night?
No. I didn't.
It's kind of insane when you think about it. Like, CJ was an incredible shooter.
Yeah.
And Ant has had nowhere near that level of opportunity. And it's like, oh, damn, really? It's because when he gets hot, he gets damn hot. Now, when he's off, he's had some absolute
stinkers.
Oh, I mean, that 0-for-10 night in Minnesota is going to stand out for a long time. But it's neither here nor there. The performance that I'm looking at from yesterday afternoon, last night's game, was Shaedon Sharpe, who continues to string together games of productivity. And he keeps saying all the right things in the post-game press conference. Not talking about how many minutes he's played or not played. It's about what he's learning, what he's understanding, the soft skill nature of the growth of his game. And he's like, you know what? I'm trying to be more aggressive on the glass. And it's feeding, not even on the offensive glass, the defensive glass. And something that's been popping up a lot is, look, you can be a good rebounder in the NBA by grabbing the non-contested ones. Josh Hart is unbelievable at this. The 50-50 balls, it's not a 50-50 ball with Josh Hart on the floor. Number one, he's a savant rebounder, but it's also like it's knowing kind of where the ball is going to be. He has the Dennis Rodman, you know, computer brain of where the ball is going to be, but it's an effort thing. And it's using his athleticism, it's using his strength to box out guys and go get that ball. Shaedon is a 0.1% NBA athlete. We all know that. He has got four of the five highest dunks on the season this year. When I see him go up and out-rebound Andre Drummond, who statistically is the greatest defensive rebounder in the history of the NBA, when you talk about percentage, you know when he's on the floor, it is almost 26% of defensive rebounds that he grabs.
I don't know how I would have known that, Danny.
That's disgusting. He is
yeah.
He is an insane rebounder. And when you're beating that guy to the apex,
yeah,
who is 6'11", 285 pounds.
A big dude.
He seals you off. He knows how to, like, tip it to his spot. And Shaden goes, you know what? No, I'm going to go grab that. I'm going to go use my otherworldly athleticism and go grab that ball. That's how you get more than just the scoring at him. Because this season, the first 4 months of the season, you just didn't see him impact games outside of scoring. Every now and then he'd have a couple assists. Every now and then he'd flash a pass. But it's the activity on both ends of the floor. And I'm not asking the guy to be the biggest stopper defensively. Just don't get cooked and don't get lost. The thing about him that stands out is when he's locked in and giving that effort and intensity, it just translates directly to every part of the game.
Well, it's almost as if basketball is a team game, and we're starting to see Scoot Henderson, Shaden Sharp,
yes,
they're understanding that. But consistency is going to be the big one, and that is going to be what makes them turn the corner as a whole. And what we've seen now, the longest stretch of consistent play from Scoot Henderson, and last night was not a great scoring night from him, but it was consistent basketball. From Shaden Sharp, this is like a four-game run of the best consistent basketball we've seen of Shaden Sharp. And that's not to say everybody just looks at scoring. No, it's everything that you're talking about with whether it's rebounding or when you don't make a shot, how do you react on the other end of the floor? We've seen that for four straight games. What does it look like in the final 20, though?
Yes.
And that's going to be indicative of what they have moving forward. And you talked about this yesterday. That may not even be what it holds in their future in Portland, but what the value is for another team that watches these last 20 games and says, all right, value goes up. Blazers can be more active in finding a final piece to go with whomever they deem the guys that are the future of the organization.
And as it pertains to Shaden Sharp, look, Andrew Wiggins has been a good player. He's been a title winner and an all-star. But what have you always heard about Andrew Wiggins? He's a top-level athlete who doesn't contribute outside of the intangible defense stuff, which really didn't get unlocked until Golden State. And he doesn't impact the game in any other way. He doesn't rebound. He doesn't create for others. He doesn't do all of the other stuff. And Shaden Sharp, prior to the past month, was heading down the path of guard Andrew Wiggins. Didn't impact the game outside of scoring. And don't get me wrong, the name of the game is putting ball in hoop.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to find ways to impact games on nights that you don't have it. We've seen it from Anthony Simons this year. He's rebounding the ball. He's getting steals. He took a freaking charge the other day. I can't remember the last time I saw Anthony Simons take a charge. He's done it twice on this road trip. Both times he's gotten up, looked at the bench, and smiled. Like, yeah, I'm doing this too. I'm 195 pounds. I'm the smallest guy on the court. I'm doing it too. And they're enjoying it, and they're coming together on it, and you can see it just kind of flow throughout the team. And you said it in hour number one, Scoot Henderson, on nights when the shooting isn't there, he has found ways to impact the game, whether it's getting deflections, whether it's jumping out and getting steals, and whether it's being aggressive, hitting the glass, hitting the offensive glass, making the extra pass. Even when he makes mistakes, you can see it like, I gotta get this back. I got to find a way I'm not hitting shots. I got to find a way to contribute. Whatever it is. And if you've got a team full of guys who do whatever it is on a given night, that's how you can go on the streaks they've gone on and not rely on Ant and Jeremy and DA because their consistency levels are higher to bail you out every single game.
Yeah, there's been that common thread, whether it's the 10 of 12 that they won before the All-Star break or coming out of it, where they were sluggish, but the last two games have probably been two of the best basketball games they've played back-to-back.
Mm-hmm. All season.
All season. And that is, it's reassuring, but you know, the proof is going to be in the pudding with how long it can go and where it goes from here, because that's the great unknown with this Trailblazers team. It's good to see, though, and it goes to Chauncey Billups has gotten through.
Yeah.
He has gotten through to them. To what degree? Who knows the long term? Because as we talked about yesterday, he's probably not going to be the coach here next year. And that's going to be another big one is, all right, is the same effort and level of play and mental engagement, being mentally engaged, is that going to be there with whoever the next coach is going to be, or if they're even here?
Well, one guy I think you're going to be certain of is going to carry that torch regardless of who the coach is Dumani Kamara. He is now getting national attention. He has entered the prestige zone. What is the ceiling for Dumani Kamara for the rest of this season and maybe even going forward? Danny Dusty, Tenny the Fan. It's official. Tumani Kamara has entered the prestige zone. Today, the NBA announced that Tumani Kamara has been named the Western Conference Defensive Player of the Month alongside Eastern Conference winner Evan Mobley. If you've been tracking along the betting markets, Evan Mobley is currently the betting favorite to win the Defensive Player of the Year. When you are on a team that is under 500 and you get this kind of recognition, you have officially made it into the zeitgeist, what people talk about nationally. The national media members and the people and the assistant coaches and everybody who votes on these things, this is how you get in the conversation. And the analytics support that is being driven by Blazers broadcast support staff and on-air personality, Tom Haberstroh, is out there. He has a chart that is out right now that shows that Tumani Kamara is currently second in the NBA in defensive stops. In defensive stops, quantifies as offensive fouls drawn, charges, blocks recovered, and steals. The only player ahead of him is Dyson Daniels at 197. Dyson Daniels might set a he's going to set a record for deflections, but he also has the potential to set a record for steals in a game or for steals per game. Dyson Daniels has been a revelation, and he should absolutely be in consideration. The difference between Dyson Daniels and Tumani Kamara is Dyson Daniels is a defensive playmaker, a juiced up Matisse Thybulle, where he is a theft machine and he's a guarder of guards. Tumani Kamara, as we talked about this the other day, can guard quite literally 1 through 5, 1 through 4 incredibly well.
Yeah.
But if he gets a turn on Nikola Jokic, as he did against the Denver Nuggets, where he spent 80% of his time in that game guarding the best offensive player on the planet, that's how you know that dude is stamped and is real. And I think it's no longer a question of Tumani Kamara making an all-defensive team. It's which all-defensive team he makes.
There's 7 guys that have won Defensive Player of the Month this year. I mean, just to kind of put that into perspective, Mobley has won it twice. And then you add Victor Wembanyama, Dyson Daniels, Jaren Jackson, Amen Thompson, Andrew Nembhard, and then Tumani Kamara to that list. I mean, that... And you look at the Western Conference guys, it's been Wemby, Jaren Jackson Jr., Amen Thompson. Mm-hmm. Like, those have been the other guys. All of those guys are, one, either on playoff teams mm-hmm. or Victor Wembanyama.
Yes, and just as a note here, Wemby is third on this list, and he's been shut down for 2 weeks now of the defensive stops.
The defensive stops. Yeah, he's pretty good.
By the way, Tumani Kamara leads the league in 2 categories there. Offensive fouls drawn and charges drawn. He has a very specific skill set. And like where Dyson Daniels excels in steals, Victor Wembanyama excels in blocks, Tumani Kamara has a very real... He's a gifted flopper, but not in the sense of like a James Harden or a Austin Reeves, as we've seen in offense.
Go to the LeBron play when they played the Lakers the last time.
He took it right. He baits him. He baits guys. Again, you could even call him a master baiter, if you will. He will set a guy up, and I've talked to him specifically about this. It happened early on in the season when they played the New Orleans Pelicans, and he set up Zion the exact same way he set up LeBron. He got pummeled in the chest by Zion, and Zion is not when he puts his shoulder down, there's no way you don't feel that. But two gave a ton of resistance on the first 2 bumps. Zion gave him the third, and he went to the rim and scored. And so Tu knew the next time coming down the floor, he explained this, like, he goes, when he scored, I knew coming down the floor, he'd have a little bit of confidence that he was able to push me out of the way. And Zion's 280 pounds.
Yep.
Look, Tu's 235 pounds, and he is strong. But Zion, Luka, LeBron, those guys have a different level of strength and size. Tu told me, he goes, when he gave me the first bump, I gave him the same resistance. When he gave me the second bump, I gave him almost the same resistance, so he felt like I could get that third one. As soon as that third bump hit, he took it, but he didn't take it square in the sternum. He took the initial part of it and then went to the ground. Boop!
Going the other way.
Foul. And he got up and smiled. Like, gotcha. He knows how, which is insane, that in year 2, and yes, he's an older second-year player, but the fact that he has learned the dark arts of how to set that up this quickly is incredibly impressive.
I just like the way he plays basketball. Like, Tumani Kamara is, even last year, he was so fun to watch because that's the That's the end of the floor that he knew was going to be how he made it in the NBA. And to watch everything else just kind of come together this year with the confidence and his ability to score, he's not a polished scorer. He will never be a guy who's going to be a volume scorer. But he can give you some buckets, and his imprint will all be on the defensive end of the floor. I love watching him. You can see exactly why he wears 33. He wears the armband. It is Scottie Pippen-esque what he does on that on the defensive end of the floor.
He is an elite defender. And
it's fun.
I want to give you a couple quotes from some of the most some of the best offensive players in the league. This is from one Damian Lillard, and I'll back this up a step further. I've talked to Dame multiple times about Tumani specifically, and he's gone in depth on this. And this is from Dame. In my personal opinion, when I look around the league and I'm guarded by all the top perimeter defenders, and if you look at on a given night, that's what Dame sees in front of him. They aren't hiding guys on him. They haven't hit anybody on him in 14 years. He goes, I think that he's right there at the top. He's competitive. He has the size and length and energy to do it. He takes pride in it. He's constantly going. He's not going to go away. He's there the whole time. Trey Murphy III, who has been a revelation for the Pelicans and might be their best offensive player going forward. He has some real all-star juice to him. Tumani Kamara, he's an elite defender. I don't think people really know, and I don't think people paid attention to how good he is. And then Tyrese Maxey to Jason Quick, when he wrote his article on the how Tumani is looked at around the league. The ball would go through the net, and he would try to deny me and pick me up the whole game. Someone who's with that size and who can pick up full court and is that relentless, kudos to him, man. And I have talked to multiple other all-star scoring leaders in the NBA about Tumani over the last 18 months. Every single one I have talked to have had some version of, that dude is a bleepity bleep. And they say it with the most effusive praise. Like, he has had the respect of his peers since he came in the league.
Yep.
He is now getting the beat writer support, the national media support, and the NBA at large. Like, watch how teams scheme away from Tumani Kamara. How many picks they run Tumani. Tumani doesn't really pick up 80 feet all that often anymore. He'll still do it.
Yeah.
He usually picks up at about 50, 60 feet. They will run at least two, sometimes three picks to try to get him off their primary ball handler, just so they can get into their offense, because he's such a game wrecker.
I like it. And I also appreciate Tom Haberstroh going out and doing the legwork to make sure people are aware.
Yes, this is how this stuff works.
He's fun, man.
You remember the Marcus Smart Defensive Player of the Year? That was a full court press put on by the Boston Celtics in a year that Robert Williams III, his teammate, should have won Defensive Player of the Year. Still a weird thing that they did that, but it is what it is. All right, coming up next, the Philadelphia Eagles have given Saquon Barkley all of the monies. What does that do to the running back market, the NFL world at large, and or does it do anything at all? We'll get to that and more, but first, here's the Big Kahuna Sports Center update.
You ever had a Big Kahuna burger?
Saquon Barkley told the New York Giants, show me the money, and then he saw a dysfunctional bleep show and said, get me out of here, somebody, and went to their quasi-crosstown rival in Philadelphia. Had one of the most productive seasons a running back has ever had in the history of the league. Took them to a Super Bowl, won a Super Bowl, and now he is getting paid.
Get that money, Mike.
The highest average annual value contract ever handed out to a running back is now Saquon Barkley's, and he earned every last penny of it.
Yeah, 2 years, $41.2 million. That'd be $20.5 million per year. So he's getting that money, man. And look, his value to the Eagles was incalculable because of it was always the threat of Saquon Barkley, too. Think of the big runs that he had. I mean, it was like he would rattle off a 50-yarder, a 60-yarder.
Every time they needed one.
And you would just go, yep, this game has flipped on its head. It is over. And when you have a quarterback that has the limitations that Jalen Hurts has, which I am much higher on Jalen Hurts, and I think a lot of people are, because all the dude does is win, and he is not Patrick Mahomes, he's not Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, he's just a winner, and he's a gamer, and I love him. But when you know that you cannot rely on Jalen Hurts to sit back and pick defenses apart, You got to have a dude, and they got their dude. This is a horrible day if you're a Giants fan. I know P1 Jordan is listening. I'm sorry, man. But the fact that Saquon Barkley went just across the street and goes to Philly and has the season that he had, caps it with the Super Bowl, and now gets the money that he wanted from New York, and he gets it from Philly after winning a Super Bowl and with a loaded roster moving forward, it hurts. It stings. But the crazy part about what Saquon can do for Philly in opening up A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith is the fact that Howie Roseman has done it again. Drafting well, getting your books right and keeping them right, not over-investing in positions that you know you have some flaws at. It's been brilliant what Philadelphia has been able to do. And look, part of it is they have a bunch of guys that have an awareness of what they have as a team and what they can do moving forward. And
which you don't see in the rest of the division, man. Because C.D. Lamb has agreed to restructure his contract with the Dallas Cowboys. And he's tweeted out, "It can't just be about me. Wink, wink, nod, nod, Dak. Restructure your freaking deal, dude."
Yeah. Well, when you have him sign it this past year, look, it's $44 million against cap this year. You're probably going to have to eat that because next year it's $90 million. It's $89 million in change.
And meanwhile, the Eagles are, as of right now, would you say it was $46 million in cap space that they had going into next year?
Yeah. Yeah.
I can tell you right now, without looking, the Cowboys are nowhere near that.
I can look that up for you right now.
Just with a $90 million cap hit alone, they can't be anywhere near that.
Scrolling. Yeah, the Eagles are at 46. The Cowboys are at 66. But that's with only 34 guys signed to the roster.
Seven less guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Eagles will have 41, and they've got $46 million on the books.
That's insane.
Yeah, that's not a lot of guys.
No, particularly when your quarterback is taking up $90 million of it.
Yeah,
and Zach Martin is retired.
Not great, Bob.
Bob. You lost the Zach Martin cap hit, but you lost Zach Martin.
Yeah, but look, he was aging and injured, and
certainly
they've got bigger fish
to
fry.
Like, the idea of Zach Martin.
They have a bigger issue in that the cap number for their quarterback, who's not worthy of a cap number that high.
Is he worth half that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that the line, though? 45?
Yeah. That's probably it.
But that's the difference between franchises who are getting it done and franchises who aren't.
Well, and the big part with the CD Lamb restructuring is big for them because not just the money that it opens up $20 million this year, it adds $5 million for each year moving down the road. Mm-hmm. Dude, that is a $41 million hit against the cap in 2027. Mm-hmm. And CD Lamb's going to be okay with that because when we talk about restructuring your deal, all it is moving money into a signing bonus and it's money in pocket right now. They're going to be okay with doing that. So, you know, having CD do that, huge. You just have to have an owner who has the money, and that's usually a big hang up in it. Like, what's going to be interesting is what Cincinnati does with Joe Burrow in restructuring his deal.
Yes.
How Jerry Jones does that with Dak Prescott and to what extent he does it next year when he has a $90 million number, and how low can you get that number and how much money are you going to have to do? And then what does it do to his cap hit moving forward? Because what it does is it just kicks the can down the road.
Which we've rehashed so many times, this is why you don't give Dak Prescott that deal.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they needed the NFL needed that PR. Remember?
Yes.
It was a big
PR. The phone. Roger went, "Hey, Jerry, we need you to do something."
But you have Oso Digizua, pride of David Douglas, shout outs. He gets a, by the way, fact about Oso Digizua, his wrestling record, his junior and senior years at David Douglas. I don't know why this sticks out to me. He went 91-0.
David Douglas, storied wrestling program over the years.
91-0 his final 2 years.
They've had some dudes out of that school.
He was a 3-time wrestling state champ.
If I remember right, that's where Couture coached at?
No idea. But he got a big payday, 4 years, $80 million. He's going to stay in Dallas. And a lot of that is thanks to CeeDee Lamb, his restructure, and now what can you do moving forward if you're the Cowboys? Because you got to keep up with not just, you know, Philly, you've got to keep up with Washington and what they're doing too, because Washington is far from done. They pick up Deebo Samuel. They still got money to spend. They've been lights out in their draft and their evaluation process too. That's the biggest thing. Philly knocks it out of the park in the draft. Kansas City knocks it out of the park in the draft. Detroit knocks it out of the park in the draft. You have got to be good at the end of April if you are going to want to, if you're going to be successful. And right now you're seeing Washington is on the jump start of getting that done too. And Dallas, you're playing catch up. The only good thing you have is that the Giants are lifeless.
It's I'm sorry, Giants fans.
I am too.
I'm sorry, Cowboys fans. You have two teams that are running your division and you have no hope.
Yeah, well, there will be hope. They'll find a way to be. They'll find a way to get some hope. I don't know if Giants fans will.
I don't know. If
Cowboys fans always do.
Well, they make it's false hope.
Boys are always back, baby. No, you're not.
No, you're not. You haven't been back for 30 years.
Hey, but you got also a Digizua.
Hey, there you go. Come on, next
fun one. Name to say and a good football player.
We'll put a little bow on today's show with another move in the NFL that's going to have an impact as Devontae Adams is now looking for a new home. Get that and more as we wrap today's show here on Danny and Dusty, Tanny the Fan. The experiment is officially over in New York as the Jets have let go of both Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams now.
Oh, no. What are they going to do?
Well, figure out a quarterback and another wide receiver.
Oh, and they told Alan Lazard, too, that he can find his way out of town if he can find a partner.
I mean, it's not surprising. It's going to double their cap space. It's going to clear $29 million off the deck this year, but it's going to force the Jets to eat $8 million in guaranteed money for Devontae Adams. Look, Devontae Adams is not what he was 2-3 years ago. He can help a team.
Yeah, the problem with Devontae Adams is Devontae Adams' biggest fan.
Yes. Well, I mean, he has wide receiver syndrome.
But watching the receiver show on Netflix, that was something, because all of those high-end receivers, they have that diva in them, right?
Yes, you have to.
But he also, like, I was like, oh, I really like Devontae Adams. And I was like, what is wrong with him? Because he was very into what's good for Devontae Adams.
I also think he's reaching that point of his career where he's fighting Father Time. And you see this happen, not just with wide receivers, but you see this around the NFL.
Yeah.
The lack of willingness to accept that you are starting to fade.
Yeah.
Russell Westbrook is maybe the most perfect example of this, who up until playing with Nikola Jokic could not swallow his pride.
Yeah.
And refused to change. It took Carmelo Anthony, you know, getting sent to the Blazers and being guaranteed 15 shots a night. Until it was like, because the whole like Carmelo Anthony got blackballed thing, I hate it every time it comes up. He had at least four different offers from teams to come off the bench, but he couldn't swallow his pride and go come off the bench. He starts in Portland and then he goes to the Lakers and he comes off the bench. Like, yeah. it's a thing that, because Devontae Adams is an all-time great. He is a phenomenal wide receiver.
He is a really good wide receiver.
His career numbers are incredible. He's probably not a Hall of Famer, but he's pretty damn close.
Oh, Devontae Adams? Yeah. We'll see.
It's the era of wide receiver. And I think you're going to get some compression on that. I think he's on the outside looking in.
I think he might be.
You think he might? But again, I think with the NFL Hall of Fame, it's one of those things where you know it when you know it. And I think Devontae's right on the edge of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But again, the fact that you're saying that and it's not, no, he's not, lets you know just how truly great he is.
Yeah.
And when you're at that level.
I mean, he's active. He's a Hall of Famer. 11,884
yards. He did crack 10,000. You're right. There you go. Yeah. No, he's there.
He's going to finish over 12,000 yards in his career.
Yeah.
Yeah, he will be a Hall of Famer.
There you go.
I mean, the only guys that he's behind right now are Julio Jones, DeAndre Hopkins, Mike Evans, Travis Kelce.
And they're all in the Hall of Fame.
He is ahead of Keenan Allen, Tyreek Hill, Stephon Diggs.
God, Tyreek Hill really has piled
and Amari Cooper.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
He's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, you crack 10,000 yards. That's usually a pretty good yardstick.
Yeah. Brandon Cooks is creeping up on 10,000. He's got 9,532 yards.
Wow. Because you think about it, on average, it basically means you need to have 10,000-yard seasons. which we've kind of, I think we gloss over a 1,000-yard season like it's nothing now. Yeah. Khalil Shakir, who's a very good wide receiver and led the Bills in receiving last year, I think he finished the season with 874 yards.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a good wide receiver, man. Like,
really
but
good.
But he didn't crack 1,000 yards. And I think because we've had this era of wide receivers with how effective quarterback play was over the last decade, you had some wide receivers with some pretty juiced numbers.
Well, to be fair, they're over a 17-game schedule and you're at 800 and some yards. That's 50-ish yards a game.
Which is good. It is. Like, yeah. As crazy as that is, that like the elite of the elites are the guys that the Devontaes, the Jeffersons, the Mike Evans, like those are the guys that put up, you know, 80 plus yards a game.
Yeah. So where Davante Adams is right now, he's 33rd all time in receiving yards.
Mm-hmm.
If he gets another, if you want to say gets another 500 yards,
mm-hmm.
that'll put him 20.
Oh, so he's top 30 all time.
He'll be 25th.
Oh, God. So there's that much compression between 33 and 26?
Yeah.
Okay.
He'll pass Antonio Brown.
Who was crazy, but by God, was he good.
He was really good. He was really good. If he gets another 1,000 yards, then he'll be 22nd all time. So, yeah.
That's where it starts to tighten up, I bet. It's that top 20.
Yeah. Damn. Really
good. Again,
if you get 25, if he's in the top 25 all time,
surefire. If you look, the betting odds are him going where Aaron goes. Do you think he goes to a non Aaron Rodgers team?
He'll go where the money is.
Okay,
that's where I think he goes.
Lindsey Thyree brought up the Chargers as a potentially good spot for him.
Yeah, that would be a great spot for him. That would be a great spot. I mean, and look, if he wants to win, he'll go to a place like the Chargers.
Yeah, that's a great landing spot. I love it.
All right, that does it for us on this Tuesday. We'll be back on a Wednesday edition. We'll have Fact or Fluke, and we'll be talking about LeBron scoring like 50,000 points or something.
Probably.
Yeah.
All right. One game, I feel like that's a record.
Yeah.
It would be. And maybe, I don't know, LeBron James plus 340 on first point scored tonight.
Mm.
DraftKings, that might talk about that.
There you go.
If he's the first person to score, of course. All right, up next, you got 2.5 hours of power from their mouths to your ears. It's primetime with Isaac and Soup before Duck Basketball at 5:30. Have a great Tuesday, everybody.
Bye.
Well, you know my name is Simon, and I like to do